And I'm Taya from the Moonlight Mix.
And you're listening on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Zach Jutra. On Sunday, a student group at the Université du Québec à Montréal, UQAM, announced that they are erecting a second pro-Palestinian encampment in Montreal. In a news release, the camp, Université Populaire Al-Aqsa at UQAM, announced that they would be following McGill, Ottawa, Toronto, and other universities in Canada. The group erected an encampment on President Kennedy Avenue near Place des Arts and is demanding that McGill withdraw its recent request for a court injunction against protesters at the school. Additionally, the UQAM protesters demand the implementation of an academic boycott of Israel at UQAM, the public disclosure of all collaborations and links with Israel, and the abolition of the Quebec Israel office, as well as the repeal of all interstate or inter-institutional agreements with Israel. Over the weekend, the fire near Fort McMurray grew from 25 hectares to 5,500 hectares. Strong winds in the region drove the substantial growth of the out-of-control wildfire burning 16 kilometers southeast of the northern Alberta city between Friday and Sunday afternoon. Officials suggest residents should prepare to evacuate on short notice, ensuring they keep medication, important documents, and emergency kits ready. Officials warned residents that the fire, located 12 kilometers west of Highway 63, could affect visibility or highway access. On Sunday, wildland firefighters deployed 6 crews, along with 13 helicopters and air tankers, to combat the fire. As of Sunday, out of 43 active wildfires, the fire near Fort McMurray was one of the 2 burning out of control. The other wildfire was in Grand Prairie Forest area near the hamlet of Teepee Creek. Egypt announces its formal participation in the case filed by South Africa against Israel at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. The case accuses Israel of violating its obligations under the Genocide Convention in its war on the Gaza Strip. On Sunday, the Egyptian Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced Cairo's intention to join the case, citing escalating Israeli aggression against Palestinian civilians. In January, South Africa filed its case against Israel, accusing the country of committing genocide against Palestinians. Palestinian authorities report that the death toll from Israel's war on Gaza, which started in October, has surpassed 35,000, with the majority being women and children. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify or CJLO 1690 AM on SoundCloud.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back here after a week off. The Tommy John Show back here on CJLO 1690 AM, where we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Hope everyone's having a great Monday, May the 13th. And we're going to have a busy hour for you today. We're going to talk some NHL playoffs, some NBA playoffs. The NHL draft lottery was last weekend. We have a major championship in golf that tees off on Thursday with a whole bunch of storylines. Not to mention rookie camps in the National Football League. We'll cover all of this over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. I am Tommy Lane, and thank you for joining us here on a bit of a cloudy. It was nice this morning, now a bit cloudy here in Montreal. So, hope everyone's doing well. And if this is your first time listening to the show, we always start off with a quick recap of the news of the past week in the world of sports. So, why don't we start off with the biggest headlines? And that would be the Stanley Cup playoffs happening over the weekend, the second round. And we have a bunch of scores and topics to get into. The New York Rangers had a 3-0 lead going in the series going into Saturday night, looking to sweep the Carolina Hurricanes. As you guys know, if you're listening, they swept the Capitals in the first round. They win the first three, looking to prove to 8-0. And they had it tied in the third period, but a late power play goal for the Carolina Hurricanes forces it to a game five tonight at Madison Square Garden, 4-3 the final. But New York still in the driver's seat, up 3-1, going back home to New York. And maybe the most covered series, because we're in Canada, the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers splitting the first two games in Vancouver. Last night was game number three, and it did not disappoint. If you're an Edmonton Oilers fan, you're thinking we should be up 2-1 right now, because last night, out shooting the Vancouver Canucks, yes, this is correct, 45-18. 45-18 were the final shots, and they lose. Stuart Skinner was terrible in the loss. Pickard came in, okay, only saw three shots, but Edmonton was hitting everything except basically the net. You know, hitting posts, hitting everything. Block shot. They were, the whole third period was in Vancouver zone, and they couldn't score until there was a minute left when it was already too late. 4-3 the final, and Vancouver takes back home ice. They're up 2-1. The Florida Panthers have a 3-1 lead over my Boston Bruins, unfortunately. Game 5 will be tomorrow night in Florida, the Bruins trying to stay alive. Be interesting if they go to Linus Allmark. I think Swayman's been playing good, but it looks like maybe Allmark might get the start in Game 5. So we shall see. Florida up 3-1, looking to advance the Eastern Conference Final for the second consecutive year. The Dallas Stars have a 2-1 series lead over the Colorado Avalanche after a 4-1 victory on Saturday night. A big game from, remember him, Tyler Seguin. 2 goals, and he's didn't really do much in the opening series against Vegas. He's making his presence known in this series. He already has 3 goals in the first 3 games. Good to see him playing well. 4-1 for the Dallas Stars. They have a 2-1 series lead in that one. We had over to the hard court in the National Basketball Association, where Game 4 of the Celtics-Cavaliers series is tonight from Cleveland. The Celtics have a 2-1 series lead in that one. The Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder, that also is tonight for game number 4. 2-1, Dallas leads in that series. And we have to give a shout-out to Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They are both playing spectacular basketball right now. Also, PJ Washington doing a decent job as well. He had 27 points over the weekend for the Mavericks. They hold a 2-1 series lead, trying to push the number one seed in the West to the brink tonight. That tips off at 9:30. Last night, we had the New York Knicks try to take a 3-1 series lead back home, but the Indiana Pacers had other ideas. A huge night from all the Pacers players. Siakam had 14, Turner had 13, Haliburton had 20, TJ McConnell had 15. It was a team effort. Obi Toppin with 14, the former Knick. They push the series back to New York at 2-2. So two big games at home for the Pacers. And a series that people thought was over. Minnesota went into Denver earlier in the week, won the first 2 games, were looking to come home and just end it. Denver takes both games in Minnesota. The home team has not won yet. Huge game from Nikola Jokic. 35 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. Jamal Murray with 19. Aaron Gordon with 27. Anthony Edwards did have 44 points, set the Timberwolves postseason record in the loss. Game number 5 tips off tomorrow, a late start, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. We head over to the Diamond, where if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan, it's not looking too good right now. They are last place in the American League East at 18-22, 8.5 back of the Baltimore Orioles. And if you think things weren't going bad enough, they have to play the Orioles tonight in Baltimore, the first of 3 games tonight, 6:35 start time. Jose Berrios is on the mound, so maybe that is a bit better for the Blue Jays because he has been pitching very well, but still uphill battle. But if they can get through that series, win 2 of 3 there, you never know. It's a long season. We're only in May, goes to September, so there's obviously still a lot of baseball left. The Jays still have a lot of room to grow, but not the start they are looking for at 18-22. Like I mentioned, the Baltimore Orioles, half a game up on the New York Yankees, 5.5 up on the Boston Red Sox in the American League East. The Cleveland Guardians lead the way in the American League Central, half a game up on the Twins and Royals. The American League West belongs right now to the Seattle Mariners, half a game up on the defending World Series champion Texas Rangers. And maybe a very fun story right now, the Oakland A's, only 3.5 back. I know that's not a great division. Everyone wants the A's to stay in Oakland. The owner wants to force them to Vegas. People not really showing up to games, and then now the A's are winning. I mean, they're still below 500, but 3.5 back of their division leader, still within striking distance. We head to the National League, and the National League East is a tale of two teams. The Philadelphia Phillies and the Atlanta Braves are playing over 650 baseball right now, way up on the rest of the division, but it's the Phillies right now, 2 games up on the Atlanta Braves. The Brewers leading the National League Central, playing 24-26, 600 baseball right now, half a game up on the Chicago Cubs. And in the National League West, there's no surprise, the LA Dodgers leading the way, 5.5 games up on the San Diego Padres, 27-15 record. They are 8-2 in their last 10. And maybe one other big story, the Pittsburgh Pirates phenom pitcher Paul Skeens made his MLB debut over the weekend. He pitched fantastically, only giving up 1 run in 4 innings work, and a very good debut for the former number 1 pick, only 22 years old. So good to see him on the mound. And the last thing we'll address, Rory McIlroy winning this weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina at Quail Hollow, which is probably his favorite golf course in the world. He's won there 4 times now in his career, and he's won 2 tournaments in a row going into the PGA Championship at Valhalla, where it's funny enough, the last time he won a major championship. So we're going to talk about the PGA Championship and some of the headlines as they tee it up on Thursday from Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky. The San Jose Sharks win the NHL draft lottery. They will have the first pick in the draft, and they've pretty much said already they're going to draft Celebrini from Boston University. He's going to go number 1. Chicago with the 2nd pick in the draft, Anaheim 3rd, Columbus 4th, the Montreal Canadiens will have the 5th pick in the draft. The Utah, we don't know yet. The Utah Hockey Club will pick 6, the Ottawa Senators 7, Seattle Kraken 8, Calgary Flames 9, the New Jersey Devils at 10. And it's worthy to note that the San Jose Sharks have 2 first-round picks. They also get Pittsburgh's pick thanks to the Erik Karlsson trade, which is 14th overall. So, yeah, that's pretty much all the main headlines we have so far in the week. I think we did a pretty good job recapping. I don't think I missed anything. We'll mention briefly about NFL rookie camps, but we'll talk about that later in the hour. We're going to get to an ad. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what the hell is going on in the National Basketball Association and the NHL, as well as who I like heading into Valhalla on Thursdays. It's Scotty Scheffler. Is it Rory McIlroy? Colin Morikawa, one of the live guys. We'll discuss that here over the next hour. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show, back after these words from our sponsors.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel V. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So yes, it's finally here, the next major championship in golf. You know, it was just under a month ago we had the Masters at Augusta National. So we will get into that over the next hour. But we're going to start off quickly with the National Hockey League. Forgot to mention as well the Toronto Maple Leafs parting ways with head coach Sheldon Keith after their first round exit. Not really surprising. The Leafs were looking for, I'm not saying looking for a scapegoat, but they have to change some things up. The amount of times they've made it to the postseason after having 100 and something points in the regular season, coming in with expectations and just falling in the first round, or I guess last year in the second round, they had to make a change. With that payroll, with the amount of pressure in that market, with the media talking about them 24/7, you can't wheel out the same product every year. You can't do it. Now, I get it. Auston Matthews had almost 70 goals this year. He's not going anywhere. William Nylander just signed his extension. No movement clause. He's not going anywhere. You're really looking at Tavares and Marner. One of them has to go. At least one of them. You can argue both of them. I think Tavares has 1 year left. Now, don't get me wrong. If you can get Tavares to come back at a cheap price, like $2.5-3 million, he's not an $11 million player anymore. And he's got 1 year left on that deal. And that will free up some cap space, yes. But you look at their farm system. They don't have a lot because they've been going all in for a few years. They've been trading up picks. Remember, they gave up a ton of picks to get Ryan O'Reilly. They gave up picks to get Jake McCabe. They gave up picks, you name it, to get a bunch of guys at the deadline. Remember a few years ago, they gave up Foligno. So they just, they don't really have, sure, they have a few young players, and Matthew Nyes is a nice young player. But their farm system's nothing to look at and say, yes, that's what we're going to like. No. They are in a win-now mode, and of course their core is still young. They're in their mid-20s. It's not like they're 32 years old, and you're like, oh boy, what do we do? Matthews was drafted in 2016. What is he, like 26 years old? He's fine. He's going to have a 5 to 6 great years left in him. But do they have to bolster the back end? They have to get a true goalie. Samsonov's fine. Joseph Wall shows flashes, but he's always hurt. You know, so they need a scapegoat. I wouldn't be surprised if Shanahan went, but the way that press conference was handled, it looks like he's going to stay. So, not surprised Sheldon Keefe goes, and I wonder who it's going to be, whether it's Craig Berube. I know people at TSN want the Leafs to go after Brind'Amour, even though he's still in the postseason with Carolina. But he is a free agent, and he hasn't had a new deal yet. So, we shall see. But what the hell was that in that Edmonton-Vancouver game last night? That's what I really want to get to. So like I mentioned, during the news rundown, the shots were 45 to 18. 45 to 18. Now, usually, that means the score is, 5-1, 4-2 for the team with 45 shots? No. 4-3 Vancouver. They only had 18 shots. Now, I understand that they play defensive style. I know they can score, but they are very comfortable with teams absorbing the puck and them countering. I understand that. But last night, Edmonton was all over them for 20 minutes in that third period. McDavid drew a penalty. Then there was another. I forget. Evander Kane drew another penalty. They had a power play twice. It was a shooting gallery. And it's, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And I'm like, huh, this looks awfully familiar. I think I've seen this before. Where have I seen this before? How about the Oilers the last 3 years in the postseason? This is the exact same thing. They defense is fine, it's better, but their goaltending, I know they like Stuart Skinner and he's young, but my God, how many times is this going to happen? How many times can you get burnt? How many times? I'm serious. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. This is the same team, basically. Nugent Hopkins, McDavid, Draisaitl, Hyman's been here for a few years. Evander Kane's been here for a few years. I mean, it's Darnell Nurse, Evan Bouchard. The roster doesn't really change much in Edmonton. It's the same guys. And yes, they are phenomenal players. McDavid, the best player. Draisaitl, top five player in the league. But, oh my God, the team up front's great, but come on, you tell me Stuart Skinner, and I don't care how well he played post-December, it feels like they get duped every year. It's like in the middle of the regular season, oh, the goalie's playing great, we don't need to think of their goalie, and then you go to the postseason, they stink. Like, I couldn't believe watching that game. I don't really care, I don't have a horse in the race, it's fun to have two Canadian teams go at it. But it's demoralizing. It really is. If you think about it, if you outshoot a team 45 to 18 and the puck's constantly in their zone and you're losing, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Here's Leon Draisaitl after the loss last night, and he did not sound like a happy member of the Edmonton Oilers. Here is former MVP Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, probably. Thought we were the better team for the most part. And my eyes should have resulted in a win, but, you know, that's not the way hockey works sometimes. So, yeah, just regroup and get ready for game four.
You obviously don't score 5-on-5. You generate a lot, though. Warren said you need more guys in front, second, third opportunities. So where does that start?
Yeah, right there. I think we're creating enough looks. But obviously they're not falling right now, or we're not doing a good enough job of, you know, being hard in front and, you know, banging them home.
Pretty big of that first period, that the three goals they got during that stretch. When you look back at it, what do you think caused it?
I mean, a couple of nice plays by them, and, you know, they capitalize on their chances.
Now, what are they doing? What were they doing maybe through the middle of the ice, or just in terms of trying to, when they were able to hold you guys a little bit back in the first two periods, and then what changed, do you think?
Well, I don't know. They held us back in the second, maybe in the first a little bit, but certainly not in the second and the third. But, you know, they defended well. They're a good defending team, and we got to find ways to, you know, get inside and capitalize.
You guys hit, I think, 4 or 5 goal posts tonight. You generated the chances. How much of that is bearing down, or how much of that is just good goaltending or luck?
Well, post is not good goaltending. Yeah, we can certainly do a better job of bearing down and, you know, like I said, capitalizing on our looks.
When in the regular season, when you kind of get goalied, you know, you play the next team another night and you just move on. In the playoffs, you're going to see this guy again. Do you guys need to kind of go school on this guy a little bit?
I don't think so. I think we got enough guys in here that can put the puck past him. Showing it so far. He's obviously playing well. Made some big stops for them, but yeah, we just gotta, you know, be a little cleaner and you know, look to bear down a little bit more.
So that was Leon Draisaitl after the game last night, and if you can tell, doesn't seem too happy. I'm happy. You know what? It's good for him that he didn't crap on his goaltender. Imagine that. Yeah, we would have liked to save last night. You know, you can't do that because then, you know, it's just piling on. Everyone knows Stuart Skinner stunk up the joint. And he's saying, oh, we have to be better. You know, we were the better team in third period. We have to be better. He has to say those things. But if you can tell, he's like, what the hell is going on in his voice? Doesn't take a lot to realize that, you know what, maybe we are the better team and maybe our goaltending just stinks. That's what he's thinking. We're way better. We're skating circles around him, but we can't get a damn save. And then he's even admitted the goalie, he's not thrown off by the goalie. He said, well, say you're hitting posts aren't that, and that's not good goaltending. So I think he's just trying to take all the heat off his goaltender, because that's what all the storylines in Edmonton are going to be, is that, Jesus, how many times is this going to happen? There's at least, I have in my memory bank, at least 4 or 5 games in past postseasons where Edmonton's just totally outclassed a team and then they lose. Shots in the 40s to the 20s. 45 to 18 is crazy. That's crazy. 45 to 18 and you lose? And a third period where I don't even remember Vancouver entering the zone. Maybe on like a few clears, they had possession for like a second and lost it. That was one of the most dominant periods of hockey I've seen in a while. And they, it doesn't matter. It was 3-1 after the first. And then I think they said, what, they only had 4 shots in the second period. 3 shots and they still scored. Like, you can't, it's just, you can't win that way. In the NHL, I think there's regular season hockey and there's playoff hockey. And the one thing that's the same for both is you need good goaltending. You can't have that happen. You know what demoralizing it is? He's like, yeah, we'll regroup and give him a shot. I'm not writing the Oilers off by any means. But if they get another performance like that, and I assume it's going to be Stuart Skinner again, because he's been the guy for the last few years. I know Pickard, people like him. You didn't let a goal in yesterday. He faced 3 shots in the third period. Let's relax. If they lose on Tuesday night, and it's a similar style hockey game, they're all over them, McDavid's drawing penalties, and they lose, he might snap. They might snap. The one thing they have to do in the offseason, there's like, you got to get a real number one goalie. Now, whether that's calling Boston about Allmark, whether that's looking around at other options, whether it's that Mackenzie Blackwood in San Jose, I do not know. Jordan Binnington in St. Louis, I'm not sure. But I've seen now how many years of Stuart Skinner. I know he's a younger guy. But you see flashes, like Swayman's having flashes of brilliance. And he's a young goalie. He's not a finished product yet. You looked at even Price when he was younger in the postseason. He had flashes. Pecorine, he had flashes. What, like, I haven't seen Stuart Skinner have flashes of, oh my God. He makes saves sometimes, but normally he's going to be a 912 goaltender in the regular season. And he gets to the postseason, he's going to be your 880, 890 save percentage goalie, and you won't win a cup right now. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty I've seen it. Now, maybe if he goes behind the greatest defense of all time, if he's the goaltender for the 2014 Canadian Olympic team, okay, maybe he can win with a Stuart Skinner. But on an NHL hockey team right now, I can't see you winning a cup with Stuart Skinner unless McDavid scores and Draisaitl score 4 goals a game. They have to outscore their opponents right now. And then when you hit a few posts like they did last night, don't score on every power play. They only scored, what, they were 2 for 4? So they're only scoring on 50% of them. They're going to lose hockey games. And that is crazy right now. Crazy. Now, I know Chris Knobloch, the coach, is a chill guy. He's not going to panic. He's going to be like, hey, we're going to keep doing what we do. Okay. All right. But don't be surprised. Like, do not be surprised if this happens again. You know why? Because it's all we've seen for the last few years. We've seen Edmonton totally dominate teams and then just somehow lose it. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. The other series that we're going to hit at is Boston, Florida. I'm not a happy camper right now. They did not play well yesterday. And I know that was a BS goal by Sam Bennett. Shove Coyle into Swayman and then scores. They didn't call. Okay, it's fine. They were not the better team yesterday. They weren't. You talk about getting outshot. They were outshot almost as bad as Vancouver was. And I have to be honest. Are they tired? Possibly. But they're just not deep enough. They don't have the... You look at Florida's lineup. I mean, Tkachuk, Barkov, Tarasenko, Bennett, Reinhart. They don't have players like that. Sure, Pasternak played good yesterday. Very good, I found. McAvoy's a stud. Lindholm's a nice player. Marchand didn't play yesterday, but he's up there in age. He can give you those performances once in a while. But they're going to need to make some changes in the offseason. I'm happy they get some money off the books. They have some money to spend in free agency this year. That will help. But they found their goalie for the future, Jeremy Swayman. Allmark, you got to trade. You got to find a way to make him waive his no-trade clause. And get some assets. There's Lorai, looks like a stud number one defenseman. Matt Poitra, I liked a lot what I saw in the regular season. He's 19 years old. They have a lot of good young players in Providence. But right now, like, I'm going to watch on tomorrow night, on Tuesday night. But it's just not good enough. Florida's much better. The Rangers are much better. Colorado's much better. Dallas, even Edmonton. I think Edmonton would be a good matchup for us because I think Swayman can steal his games and Stuart Skinner can't stop a beach ball. But besides that, I mean, I don't think we would beat any of the other teams unless Swayman stands on his head. Look at even game one. We won 5-1, whatever it was. Swayman had like 39 saves or 38 saves. He was the main reason why the Bruins won game one. And he's one of the main reasons why they beat Toronto. But how many games now is it going to take for people to realize that the Boston's just not on a Florida's level? And honestly, coming into the year, no one expected them to be anyway. They lost Bergeron. They lost Krejci. They lost Bertuzzi. They lost Orlov. They lost a lot of their key players. And Jim Montgomery and his coaching staff have done an incredible job. Even Don Sweeney have done an incredible job of plugging in guys like a Shattenkirk, like a Morgan Geeky, like a Brazo, a Pat Maroon, just guys on one-year deals, on prove-it deals, and they're contributing. I mean, Beecher's a nice young player. I like Trent Frederick a lot. Like, there's going to be Bruins players that are here for the long term. But the Bruins had chances last night. Let's not... Jake DeBrusque, he missed that chance. Charlie Coyle, Danton Heinen, they all missed a few chances. The Bruins could have easily won that game last night, despite being incredibly outplayed. Like, not even close. But we shall see. They're not done yet. It's hockey. 3-1 is not the same in the NBA as it is in the NHL. You got a chance. If they steal game 5, then you go back home for game 6. You win that, who knows? The Bruins are up 3-1 on... Toronto and I got forced to game 7. Now, Florida's not Toronto, and I don't expect the Bruins to do that, but I'm going to watch. I'm trying to be optimistic, but people are like, oh, fire Montgomery, fire this. No. Why the hell would you do that? His first year, most points in NHL history for regular season. Okay, they botched up the goalie situation in the playoffs. Fine. But this year, they weren't expected to do anything, had another tremendous year, won a playoff round with not that great of a roster. You got, of course, be insanity to fire him. He's done a great job so far. And now you actually have some money to spend in the offseason to build more of the team. McAvoy's still going to be there. Pasternak's still going to be there. Marchand's still going to be there. Coyle's still going to be there. You're going to have Swayman, Lindholm, Carlo. So a lot of the key guys and your producers right now are still going to be here next year. And you have some money to go, hopefully invest down the middle of the ice. Because Morgan Geeky and Charlie Coyle down the middle of the ice, are you kidding me? Compared to what Dallas and Colorado and Edmonton, even Vancouver. Just not the same. The NBA, man, that is, what is going on right now in the NBA? You have teams that don't even win a home court right now. Denver looked like the worst defending champion I've ever seen in the first two games of that Minnesota series. Then they go to Minnesota, everyone writing them off, and they play the Timberwolves off the floor. Maybe it was Shaquille O'Neal's comments about Jokic. I don't know. But they were a different team the last two games in Minnesota. And then, do I think Minnesota's going to fight? Hell yeah. That Anthony Edwards is unbelievable. He's going to be one of the best young... He is one of the best young players in the league. Maybe in the top 10 players in the league already. But if you look at his age, he's 22 years old. Just an absolute killer. 44 points last night just wasn't enough. But Denver, what a response. Now, Jokic is truly, truly one of the best players in the NBA. Truly one of the best players. Not just currently, of all time, if we're thinking about it. He has three MVPs now. Finals MVP. I mean, I would take him first over. If I'm building a team right now, you have to take Jokic first. There's some people like Giannis. Some people like Doncic. I think now the majority have swayed the other way. And it's like, okay, he's the best player. He might not do it the best way. He might not be the most exciting. He's just, I don't want to say perfect, but he just plays the game the way it should be played. Smart pass. Don't shoot if you don't have to. Look for the smart basketball play, and that is what he does. That's what he does. And 35-7-7 last night, that was the easiest 35-7-7 I've ever seen. It really is. And I don't know what Minnesota's going to do from here. I mean, you love Anthony Edwards, but Karl-Anthony Towns, he's been awful. I know Rudy Gobert missed game two. But, like, they need someone else to step up. If you want any chance, they stepped up in the first two games. But since then, my God, you can't even find Karl-Anthony Towns. He's an all-star. Where is he? It's crazy. Crazy right now. The Denver Nuggets, though. As a Celtics fan, I was kind of hoping Minnesota could knock him off because I don't think anyone has an answer for Nikola Jokic right now. He is that good of a basketball player. He's three MVPs in 4 years. You can argue whether he could have won it last year. And Denver is, for a team that was done, written off after losing two games at home, especially in the NBA, you lose two games at home, you're going down at least 3-1. You're not winning both after losing. They did. That's what kind of level the Denver Nuggets are on right now. Here's Charles Barkley talking about Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets.
We're back, and it's hard to beat the champs.
Yeah, I think, basketball is so simple. The Joker, Murray, and Gordon, they didn't play well in game ones and two. And now they're in full bloom. And the guys from Minnesota aren't playing well. You know, Karl-Anthony Towns did not play well again. Naz Reid is not played great again. You know, you talk about strategy and all this other stuff. That's always well and good. But at some point, it's so simple. You just have to play well. Jamal, Aaron, and the Joker have played fantastic the last couple games. That's the difference in the game. Minnesota, you saw that game tonight. Other than Anthony, nobody played well. And you can talk about champions, hard and all that other stuff. No, this team beat the champs twice because they played well. They played well in Minnesota, in Denver, but they didn't play well the last two games. I don't know if they're young, inexperienced, but the Nuggets went in there and they just executed. Yeah.
That was Charles Barkley, and that's what I saw too. The first two games, I thought Denver was in real trouble on the ropes. Looks like they overlooked Minnesota. Minnesota, who hadn't lost the game. They swept Phoenix in the first round. And I don't know what Denver thought. They're like, oh, like we can beat them with our C-plus game, B-minus. And they got smoked. And like everyone writing them off, like they're done. They have no answers for them. woke him up a bit. But I feel bad for Anthony Edwards. He was sensational last night. 44 points, sets the franchise record for most points in a postseason. And no one else came along for the ride. Really, if we're being honest. When I say no one, I mean you know who you are, Carl Anthony Towns. What the hell was that? You went for a double-double. You 13 points? Are you kidding me? Carl Anthony Towns, 13 points. Terrible. For a guy who is a over 20-point-a-game guy, you got to give him that. Yeah, I know. He's not young. He's not old, though. He's 28 years old. I know he's been in the league a long time, but 13 and 12, and you let Jokic go for 35, you can't let that happen. You can't let that happen. And you can't let Aaron Gordon go for 27 at all. Like I mentioned, Dallas up 2-1 on Oklahoma City. The Celtics up 2-1 on Cleveland. Knicks and Pacers 2-2. That feels like seven games. And I hope the Knicks get it done. I want Knicks-Celtics. I think that'd be unbelievable for the NBA. They need, the ratings haven't been as high as usual. And whether it's because Steph and LeBron aren't there, that's probably playing a huge factor. They're dying to get Boston, New York. Get that rivalry in the East Finals. So the NFL rookie camps opened up this weekend or over the last few days. And everyone is overreacting based on players with no pads on in shorts running routes and throwing balls. They're already judging what they're going to be. And that's why I love the National Football League, because you have people analyzing. It's, yes, the season, September till technically February, early February. It is 365 days a year. The NFL is leading the news. Literally, on First Take today, the NBA playoffs are on. The NHL playoffs are on. They do a little bit. And by like hour, by like 25 minutes in the show, they're like, hey, NFL rookie camp. The NFL is far and away the biggest sport. And what comes with that is just these crazy storylines based off rookie camp with no pads on, their first time playing together or throwing passes together, and the defenders are literally just like hitting pads, and the linemen are just pushing little, like, whatever you call it, like, guess the sleds they call them. And you're going to tell me this guy's going to Hall of Fame because he can push a sled? Or this guy stinks because he can't push the sled as hard as someone else? Give me a break. I couldn't believe what I was reading. It's like Jaden Daniels looks unreal at Commanders rookie camp. Drake May, oh, is he even going to beat out Joe Milton? Because he had like two errant throws in practice. I'm like, Jesus. Same in Minnesota. They're like, oh, J.J. McCarthy could not complete four passes. Okay, I'm not high on J.J. McCarthy either. But it's minicamp with rookies. Let's calm down. I'm not going to judge any of these players yet before I see them play against real defenses, live reps. That's when I'll judge. I'm not a JJ McCarthy guy. I think he's a fine college quarterback, very good college quarterback. Do I think he should have been a top 5 to 10 pick in the draft? No, I don't. But it doesn't mean I'm going to judge him based off what the couple hundred balls he threw over the weekend. His first time throwing to those players as well. Like, come on, this is crazy. Literally, the Drake May media, it's like all, like you type up Drake May and you have 100 stories from Boston articles saying, oh, like Drake May's footwork needs help. Trying to, look at this, has a lot to work on. We know they're 20-something years old. They're in shorts and t-shirts. Maybe, my bad, the little practice jerseys. But you know what I mean. They're not even wearing pads. They're wearing the foam things on their helmets. They just want to see where everyone's at. We're in May. We're in May. The season doesn't start till September. Training camps in what? August, July, late July? These guys are just going to constantly work and get better. Like, what are we doing here? These guys do not just show up and you're like, he's a star. Even like Pat Mahomes, people showed up at camp in Kansas City. They're like, oh, a little wild. A little, like, let's calm down. It's mini camp. It's rookie mini camp. Let's just let them develop. It's been 2 days at practice, and everyone's getting on Jerod Mayo. Well, you don't, what do you mean? Like, Drake's not the start already? He's like, guys, it's been like 2 days. Now, I know the media have stories they want to write, but you got to give it time. How can you judge throwing against air how someone's going to do? Now, what you do, you look at the tape at them in college, and then maybe you get a bit of an idea. But to think that you know what someone's going to be based on what their rookie minicamp looked like, that's crazy. That's crazy. I won't go for that. I am not over or under reacting to anything. I have to hear Jaden Daniels is the next John Elway. And that J.J. McCarthy's, what, the next Achilles Smith. Like, let's chill. Let's relax. It's rookie minicamp. Now, if Jaden Daniels does this in the regular season and has a C.J. Stroud-like rookie season, then yeah, I'll be like, hell yeah, that guy's a stud. I know why I would say that, because I saw it. If we don't remember, C.J. Stroud, everyone was picking on him because he stunk in a preseason game against the Patriots. C.J. Stroud, man, he stinks. He can't complete anything. And then he goes on to have one of the great rookie seasons of all time. Let's just pump the brakes. It was just for them to get familiar with their new teammates. That's all it was. Let's take it with a grain of salt. Please. Thank you, NFL Media. We're going to get into another ad break, and when we come back, we're going to preview the PGA Championship at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky. The second major of the year. We'll discuss that after this quick word from our sponsors. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word.
Au cinéma public, nous proposons une programmation en salle composée de films d'ici et de nouveautés internationales, de classiques et des pépites méconnues, ainsi que de courts-métrages et des séances familiales. Nos billets sont parmi les moins chers à Montréal, 10$ au tarif régulier et 8$ pour les étudiants, les enfants et les aînés. Nous offrons également des cinécartes de 6 billets pour encore plus d'économies. Venez nous voir à la Casa d'Italia, juste en face de la station Jean Talon. Et rendez-vous au cinémapublic.ca pour découvrir notre programmation. Le cinéma public pour un cinéma vivant.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6!
All good beginnings. Need some variation. Tune into REVC with me, Maxwell. It's something different every week. Mondays at noon on CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So we got the second major of the year this Thursday at Valhalla Country Club in Louisville, Kentucky. And funny enough, last time it was played there, a young man named Rory McIlroy won his fourth major title. And if you were to tell golf fans in 2014 when Rory was walking off the 72nd hole, winning his fourth major at the age of 25, winning the U.S. Open in 2011, winning the PGA in 2012, winning the Open Championship and the PGA in 2014. That, you know what, this 25-year-old who swings like prime Tiger, he's not going to win a major for 10 years. I wanted to see the odds of that. Put that on a prop bet. It's like, yeah, 10 years, Rory McIlroy won't win a major championship. You would have told me, get the hell out of here. What are you smoking? Well, it's been 10 years, and Rory has not won a major championship. He's won everything else. He's won the Players. He's won 3 FedEx Cups. We can go through everything. Ryder Cup, clutch moments. He's been number one in the world for I don't know how many weeks since that last major championship. But he is undoubtedly, besides Tiger, the biggest star. And everyone wants him to do it so bad, win another major. Because people kind of get the sense that, you know what, if he wins one, the floodgates might open again. Because it's been so long since he's won one. But if you think about it, in 2015, 2016, 2017, he never really gave himself a lot of chances. It was always backdoor top tens, never always off to a slow start. And if he got off to a slow start, then the second round would stink. In the last few years, he's been in the hunt in majors. He was in the top 10 at every major in 2022. He should have won the Open Championship that year. He had a one-shot lead on the back nine, and then Cameron Smith goes nuts, wins the Open. Should have won the U.S. Open last year with Wyndham Clark. I know Wyndham Clark's a good player, but like he's not a Rory McIlroy level. Rory lost by one shot there at the U.S. Open. But this is, to me, the best chance he's had to win a major in a long time. I won't go 2015 Masters when he was like a 5-1 favorite and then Jordan Spieth went crazy. If you ask me, when have you felt the most confident about Rory winning a major? It's now. He's won 2 tournaments in a row. He's won there before. And if you want to talk about where his game is, Quail Hollow is not an easy golf course. It's hosted major championships. It's hosting the PGA Championship next year. It was playing incredibly tough. It was a 2-man race. It was Rory and Xander Schauffele. And then there was a huge gap. Huge gap. For most of the day, it was like Rory at 12, Schauffele at 11, and the next guy was at like 5-under. There's a huge gap between the two. Rory ends up winning by 6. And, you know, Schauffele just didn't really do anything on the back 9. But if you look, if you're not named Xander Schauffele, Rory beat them by 8 shots at Quail Hollow. Now, I know he loves Quail Hollow. It's one of his favorite spots. But Valhalla is one of his favorite spots. It is a long, tough, hard golf course, which will eliminate a lot of the shorter hitters. This is why you see PGA Championships. You have guys like Brooks Koepka win. You know, the Phil year was a bit weird when he won at Kiawa, not going to lie. That was just like everything came together for 1 week. You know, Colin Morikawa won the PGA. It's guys who can hit the ball far. Rory has 2 PGA championships. Guys who like to hit the ball far. This is a perfect course for him. And considering where his game was just a few weeks ago, prior to the Masters and in the Masters, it's been night and day. He found something in his swing when he played the Zurich Championship with Shane Lowry and those 2 rounds in the weekend. He played great. He said he found something. And then this leading up to this week, he's like, I feel really, really good. And he went to a course that he really, really, really likes. And he destroyed it. Quail Hollow did not look like a major championship venue at all. Rory made it look like that. Now, if the rest of the field looks like, damn, this is going to be a tough course when I host a major next year. Rory made it look like it was like a par 3 course. So I am incredibly confident going in, but here's the thing. I've been incredibly confident about Rory McIlroy before. And also, there's one other key factor in this that we're not talking about. Scottie Scheffler did not play because he's at home with his pregnant wife. And Scottie Scheffler is on a Tiger Woods-like run right now. What, he has 4 wins and 5 starts. That run of winning the Players, winning at Bay Hill, winning the Players, finishing second in Houston, winning the Masters, and then winning the next week at the RBC Heritage. That is insane. Now, Rory's won 2 in a row, and these guys are the heavy favorites. It's Scheffler at 4-1, McIlroy at 7-1, and it drops to Koepka at 12-1, John Rahm at 16-1. And to me, this is going to be really interesting because Koepka just won over on LIV last week, right before, like he did earlier, I think last year, going into the PGA, and he won the PGA last year. He loves the PGA Championship. This is Brooks Koepka's tournament. He's playing well coming in. He should be in the hunt. Rory's won 2 tournaments in a row. He should be in the hunt. And Scottie Scheffler, by far, is the best player in the world, who's on a crazy tear. So those, it's like those three, if you want to include Rahm, Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg, those are like the outside chances. DeChambeau's playing well. But it seems like there's 5 to 7 guys who are way ahead of the field in the odds. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this. I mean, it's hard to bet against Scottie Scheffler. He's playing so well. But to me, Rory, he's played a lot. Scheffler hasn't played since the Heritage, which is, what, 3-4 weeks ago. Rory's played twice since then and has won twice since then. So he feels like his game's in good shape. Here's Rory McIlroy following his victory at the Wells Fargo Championship yesterday.
At the 2024 Wells Fargo Championship, into the interview room. Rory, congratulations on your 4th win at the Wells Fargo Championship and your 26th on the PGA Tour. If we could just get an opening comment on what this one means to you.
I don't know what's more unbelievable, you know, winning a PGA Tour event for the 4th time or getting my 26th. Whenever I sort of hit some of these milestones or do these things, I always think back to, you know, for example, like 20-year-old me playing in this tournament for the first time. And, you know, if you know, I had known back then that this is the way everything was going to pan out, I probably wouldn't have believed you. So, anytime things like this happen, I feel incredibly lucky and grateful that I have the opportunity to do what I do. And, you know, I was able to play good enough golf today to take advantage of that opportunity.
Wins in your last 2 starts, you moved up to number 4 in the FedEx Cup. How much confidence do you have now moving forward, and how much have these 2 wins done for your season?
Yeah, they've done a lot. I think, you know, getting the win at Zurich with Shane was a big confidence builder for both of us. And I definitely took a lot from it, especially with how I played at the weekend there. And I think this week was just a continuation of how I felt. I felt like I drove the ball incredibly well at New Orleans, especially over the weekend. I drove the ball great again this week. And, historically, this is a golf course that lets you hit driver a lot. And you can really take advantage of length off the tee if you have it. So, you know, it's one of the big factors why I've been able to do so well here over the years. And, you know, combine that with, how comfortable I felt with my short game and my putting this week. And, I'm able to put runs together on this golf course that, has enabled me to win here for the 4th time.
So that's Rory McIlroy talking about winning the Wells Fargo Championship yesterday. And like he said, he's hitting the heck out of his driver right now. And if he can hit the ball 340 down the middle, there's no reason why he shouldn't be in the hunt this weekend. So like I said, I think the big three obviously are Koepka, Scheffler, Rory. You know, Scheffler's in a class by himself. But I think you got to look out for Ludvig Åberg. I think I got to look out for DeChambeau. I hope he doesn't win. But another outside person to look out for, Cameron Smith from Australia. He's won a major before. He's playing great on the LIV Tour. If you want an outside shot, he's around like 25-30-1. Thank you for listening to this week of the Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday. We'll talk more of the Stanley Cup playoffs, the NBA postseason, as well as recap what happened at Valhalla for the PGA Championship.
Thank you guys for listening. We're back next Monday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 AM. I am Tommy Lane. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Hi, this is...